Welcome to Bach and Beyond.
My name is John Galm.
And I'm Doug Jameson. We are your co-hosts for the show. For the next hour, we will take you through 800 years or more of music, featuring classical, jazz, popular selections,
and musical genres from around the world.
You're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio. We broadcast at 93.5 in Nelson, 96.5 in Crawford Bay, 101.5 in Crescent Valley, and 107.5 in New Denver. My name is Doug Jameson. I am a composer in Nelson, and I am your host for this week's edition of Bach and Beyond.
Hi, on today's show, my guest is David Restivo. David is the keyboard instructor now of Selkirk College as of January 2019.
That's right.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Doug. It's good to be here.
Yes. Good to have you in Nelson, too.
It's great to be in Nelson. It's a beautiful place to live.
So on today's show, we're going to listen to some music, original music by David and some recordings he's done. And we're also going to get a bit of a preparation for a concert coming up next Monday.
Right. Right.
And that's the 25th of November, mm-hmm. Monday evening, 7:30 at St. Xavier's Pro Cathedral. That's a concert being put on by Selkirk Pro Musica. And it's going to feature the David Restivo Trio.
Yes, they're billing it as that because
There are three of you.
There are three of us, but it's, I would say that it's the way we've been rehearsing. It's been more of a collective project than just all my projects. You know, it's something Rob Fahey and Mike Rudd and I have all put some energy into and brought some music to the table.
Mm-hmm. Great. And the other members, Mike Rudd is also an import to Nelson in the Selkirk faculty.
Yes, right? He's just the newest member.
Yeah, he just joined in September, I guess.
Right.
And then, but Rob Fahey's been in Nelson for a little longer than me, which is probably 7 or 8 years, something like that. And he's mm-hmm. really excellent double bass player. And so it's going to be a great trio. I'm looking forward to hearing that. And so we're going to listen to, we're going to talk a little bit about why David plays the piano and how you got started, things like that.
Yeah.
Maybe you could just jump in and tell us where it all began.
Where did it all begin? Well, both my parents were musical. Neither of them was a professional musician, but they both played music. My mother played some classical piano and had taught piano at a certain point in her life. She was actually an arts critic. She was a journalist. And so from an early age, I was getting taken to concerts and exposed to all kinds of music, mostly classical music and folk music and, you know, world music before that was a term, and blues and things like that. So I heard, my head got full of a lot of different kinds of music. And just hearing my mother play, sitting under the piano. So the piano was around. I think that I was sort of drawn to the drums first, and I had a little drum set early on, and then I started playing euphonium around the fifth grade, school band and things like that. So I had the wind and the percussion, and but the piano was something that I really just kind of came to on my own. And it started with really just kind of picking out things by ear, but I became interested in jazz music, particularly after hearing a, by chance, a Dizzy Gillespie recording.
Mm-hmm.
There was one summer where we stayed in Michigan at the home of some friends, just sort of rented it for the summer. I was probably 3 or 4 years old at the time. And I think it was just my brother and my dad and I staying at this place for the summer. My mom was working or something. I can't remember the exact circumstances. But I remember looking through this record collection that was in this house mm-hmm. and finding an album called The Greatest of Dizzy Gillespie.
Mm-hmm.
And just thinking, well, that's a crazy name. And, you know, who's this guy with the, you know, crazy mm-hmm. cheeks and the upturned trumpet? And I just was fascinated by the whole image and the name. And then when I heard the music, without really knowing what I was hearing, there was something that got stirred in me, I guess, you know. And then by the time I was sort of maybe 10 or 11, I would say that I was more listening more actively to jazz music. And, you know, there would be records that, because my mother was a critic, she would be on some list. This is the pre-internet days. So she'd be on some list somewhere of critics. This was in the U.S., and she would get these big boxes would come to the house from Columbia Records for mm-hmm. promotion only, and so I remember just looking through those boxes and finding all the jazz records, and you know, well, I'll take that, mm-hmm. you know. So,
yeah, mail order was a big thing back in those days too. It was like things that arrived in the mail, and LPs always had so much information on them,
and yeah, and I love
so
that.
large 12 inches by 12 inches or something to that effect,
and and getting to read about all the players, like reading the liner notes, reading about who the players were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, now you have to Google to find out who's playing on
that's right. Yeah, it's a whole different world. And it's even CDs, they put in little booklets or something, but you know, tiny print. It wasn't kind of didn't have the tactile feel of the LPs. That's quite neat.
That's true.
Yeah, I used to belong to a record club, and I'd get once a month. I would order some LP, and it would show up in the mail. That was always a big deal because I was living a farm in the country and didn't even listen to the classical music or the radio or anything like that very much. But it was always a lot of fun just to explore these albums and.
Right.
Play them until they skip so badly.
Yes, right.
Those are the days of lower grade of sonic clarity.
Right.
Nowadays, you never think of it skipping or any of those awful noises we used to deal with, the clicks and pops.
Yeah, although there's also that warmth you get from the old analog recordings that you don't always get from the digital.
Mm.
So it's a trade-off, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I remember listening to a lot of albums on cassette, too, and wearing those out, and you know, until they started to get all wobbly.
Yeah. Yeah, the tape can stretch a little bit here and there, too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, deadly if you left one in your car window dashboard or something like this.
Yeah.
In the summer. It was history.
Right.
Yeah. So maybe we should start with some music examples.
Sure. Well, I mean, we could start with some of that Dizzy Gillespie music if you want, because that's where it all began for me in a way.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Okay.
So here's a Dizzy Gillespie piece. Can you tell us what we're going to hear, Dave?
Yeah, so this is Manteca, which is a piece that Dizzy co-wrote with the great Cuban conga player Chano Pozo, who he was collaborating with at this point. And this was the beginning of the jazz tradition meeting with the Afro-Cuban tradition. And Chano Pozo famously once said that, you know, Dizzy doesn't speak Spanish and I don't speak English, but we both speak African. So later on in my life, I had the opportunity to make a little more of a study of Latin American music, specifically the Afro-Cuban approach. But so this was an interesting introduction to jazz with that Afro-Cuban element in it.
And you had this around 4 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the first time I heard it.
Wow.
And the trumpet playing still is spectacular.
Mm-hmm. And this recording, just by the way, goes back to 1947, I noticed, too.
That's right.
So let's listen to it. So that was Dizzy Gillespie and Manteca.
Yeah, that was what started it all for me.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive that you heard that at age 4 and it gave you a direction in life.
Yeah, I didn't know that at the time, but I did get my dad to buy me one of those little toy plastic trumpets the next day that had the 4 valves on it.
You know? Right. You still got it?
No, I don't. That's long gone.
Yeah. Yeah, so what other influences did you have in your early years?
Well, as I said, classical music was a big one, and I wasn't playing it. I didn't actually, because I was mainly a self-taught pianist early on, and I was playing a lot by ear and absorbing things that way, and my first teachers were in the improvisation and jazz side of things, I didn't really get my reading to a point where I could really absorb classical music. I did study classically starting in high school, but I would say that now it's something that I can't have as a big part of my practice routine, and it's part of my teaching as well. So that was a big influence, and what was neat about that was that my mother and I shared this love of classical music, and we would go to concerts, and sometimes we would discover things together, which was really neat because, she would introduce me to things, but also, I would discover things and introduce her to them, or we would go to a concert and discover these pieces of music together. So something I think it would be need to play a little bit of, and I can't remember how we discovered this piece, but I think it was because we were both fans of the pianist, Alicia de la Rocha, the Catalan pianist. We fell in love with this Cacciatorian piano concerto.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, to this day, it's one of my favorite pieces of music, and became one of hers as well. And that was sort of one of those things that I, you know, she didn't know a lot about jazz, and I certainly introduced her to things like that. But I felt like the classical side of things was more her territory in a way, but it was nice that we could sort of share that. And, you know, kind of find these discoveries together. So this is one of those pieces.
Mm-hmm. So. That's quite a neat relationship that you have with your mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, there are stage mothers that really kind of get your the young artist's career going and working all the time. But you had kind of a just different exchange, it sounded like.
Exactly.
Just kind of supported each other and shared things.
Neat. Yeah.
Yeah. So why don't we listen to some Cacciatorian piano concerto.
That would be great.
Because we've got the YouTube at our fingertips here, we can choose whatever, almost any pianist at any movement we want.
So, right, okay.
Great. So do you have a choice there?
Let's if we can find the De La Rocha recording, I think that would be a great one to listen to.
Thank you.
So that's Alicia de la Rocha playing the Cacciatorian Piano Concerto. And we had to fade that out because our show is not that long. And it's a pretty substantial piece. The concerto alone's 37 minutes long. So that was enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah. It's a pretty powerful opening.
Mm-hmm.
Some great, great harmonies. I've always been a harmony guy, so, you know. I'm a rhythm guy, but I'm also a harmony guy, so.
Really, it's good to be both of those guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and a melodic guy, too.
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah. It's all tied in.
Yeah, multiple kinds of guys.
That's right.
That's right. Great. Okay, so where do we go from here? We can listen to another example or talk a little bit about other influences and maybe when you started becoming a jazz pianist.
Right. Well, when I started becoming a jazz pianist, well, my mother, again, was influential in that regard, even though she wasn't the one that introduced me to jazz. Once she sort of saw that that interest was there, we were living in Bennington, Vermont, when I was sort of in my early teens, you know, sort of 12, 13, 14. Mm-hmm. And there was an interesting program happening at Bennington College that was run by a guy named Bill Dixon, who was sort of associated with the improvisational avant-garde of African-American music. He was associated with people like Archie Shepp, Roswell Rudd, Cecil Taylor, mm-hmm. people of that ilk. And so he was the head of what at the time they called the Black Music Department at Bennington College. And one of the other musicians who taught alongside him on the faculty was a saxophonist named Stephen Horenstein, who now lives in Israel. He's lived in Jerusalem now for many years. But my mother connected with him and said, you know, my son is really into this music. You know, can you teach him? And he was a little bit apprehensive at first because he'd never taught anybody my age. But, you know, I sort of connected with him recently and we were sort of talking about that period. And he sort of said that he decided to just treat me like he would anybody else who was interested in this music and start with Duke Ellington and Thelonious Monk and people like that and just go from there. And so, you know, I started just learning tunes and playing blues and learning some basic chord voicings from him. He was mainly a saxophonist, but he played some piano as well. And from there, I sort of just started devouring things, you know, because I had this, I started reading jazz history books because I had this sort of vague notion of like, well, this is the kind of music I like. I would go to the library and I'd just get records out and sort of everything that was remotely related to, you know, this mm-hmm. umbrella of sort of jazz or improvised music. And so everything from sort of Louis Armstrong and Jelly Roll Morton up through Cecil Taylor and more avant-garde things. And, you know, gradually over time, I sort of gravitated towards certain sounds. I mean, bebop was kind of the first thing that caught my ear because I was listening to Dizzy Gillespie and that led me to Charlie Parker and to Bud Powell. And then I sort of gradually started getting into, you know, John Coltrane became a huge influence and his pianist, McCoy Tyner. Mm-hmm. And the intensity of that music was very visceral and that was very inspiring to me. And at the same time, I was attracted to the lyrical kind of romanticism of Bill Evans.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of my life as a pianist has been sort of reconciling those two feelings, I guess. That sort of intense visceralness of McCoy Tyner and Coltrane and that more lyrical quality that Bill Evans had, which is not to say that McCoy Tyner couldn't be lyrical and Bill Evans couldn't be visceral. You know, they were complex musicians, but they did sort of represent, in a broad sense, they represented these opposing aesthetics, if you as it were.
Right.
So, and then, you know, I sort of became like a lot of pianists of my generation in the jazz world, the sort of what I would call the big five, sort of McCoy Tyner, Bill Evans, Chick Corea, Herbie Hancock, Keith Jarrett. Mm-hmm. Those were the people that, I got a lot of inspiration from. And then many other people as well, Wynton Kelly, Tommy Flanagan, Hank Jones, Kenny Drew. So,
this might be a good spot to play another example of.
Yeah, well,
of something, or maybe something of your own that's influenced, whatever, whichever way.
We can. Well, why don't we listen to? We'll get to my stuff. how about we listen to a bit of Bill Evans? From the You Must Believe in Spring album, which is one of my Desert Island recordings, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll find that one. And which track would you like to have?
I think the opening track, B Minor Waltz, is one of my favorite things.
Okay, well, let's listen to that.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. Beautiful.
Beautiful playing.
Yeah. Still really holds up for me. Mm-hmm. As many times as I've listened to that recording. It's really just such beautiful. His touch is so lovely and
exquisite singing. Kind of touch. Yeah.
Great really, touch and just mm-hmm. this sense of harmony again. And Eddie Gomez's very melodic bass playing. Just everything about that is great.
Mm-hmm. So it was a big influence.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so let's move on to some of your own recordings.
Yeah. So the piece that I'm going to play is something that we'll play at the concert. And it was actually inspired a little more by Herbie Hancock, I would say. And Herbie Hancock, he wrote a series of tunes named after melons. There was Watermelon Man, which he had a big hit with.
Oh, yeah.
And then he followed that up with Cantaloupe Island. And, yeah, they were both in that sort of, when jazz was starting to blend a little bit with funk and rock influences. And so I wrote a piece in that vein, and I called it Honeydew Harbor, and sort of tribute to Herbie's melon obsession. Yeah, exactly.
Great.
So this would be from my last album called The Waves, which came out in 2016 and features Alexander Brown on trumpet and Kelly Jefferson on saxophone, Luke Selleck on bass, and Maxwell Roach on drums, not the great Max Roach, who is no longer with us, but a namesake.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so here's Honeydew Harbor.
Thank you.
And that was Honeydew Harbor from an album called The Waves by David Restivo, who is my guest today on Bach and Beyond. And next Monday night, November 25th at 7:30 p.m. at St. Xavier's Pro Cathedral in Nelson, Selkirk Pro Musica presents the David Restivo Trio. Tickets are only $20, so come on out. It's going to be a wonderful show. So we're going to move on to another piece by David.
Right, and this one I didn't write. It's a standard from the jazz repertoire called It's You or No One, and offhand I can't remember who the author is, but there are famous recordings by people like Dexter Gordon. But anyway, we're going to play it, I think, in our concert, the Pro Musica concert. But I also recorded it with this trio. This is actually a live recording from a number of years back, but it's an arrangement I did of this piece of music, and this is the same trio that will be appearing on my upcoming recording, which will be due out probably in the spring, March or April. And the trio is two long-term colleagues of mine. Jim Vivian is the bassist, and the drummer is actually from New York State area, and her name is Alyssa Falk, and she's a really great drummer. She's probably my favorite drummer to play with. We just have this cosmic kind of connection when mm-hmm. we play together. So anyway, so this is that trio performing It's You or No One.
Mm-hmm. And just so people don't get too confused, there is a David Restivo trio coming next week, and that's going to be David plus a couple of Nelson-based musicians.
Yeah, that will be Mike Rudd on guitar and Rob Fahey on bass.
Right. But this recording we're just about to hear is the other David Restivo trio.
Yes. Right.
Was the David Restivo Trio.
Yeah, a little taste of It's You or No One with Jim Vivian on bass and Alyssa Falk on drums.
And we should have a little insert here. Tell everybody what station they're listening to and the name of the show. You're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio. We broadcast at 93.5 in Nelson, 96.5 in Crawford Bay, 101.5 in Crescent Valley, and 107.5 in New Denver. My name is Doug Jamieson. I am a composer in Nelson, and I am your host for this week's edition of Bach and Beyond. And my guest today's show is David Restivo, who is now a Nelson-based pianist. And David also performs with Fawn Fritzen. And you can maybe tell us a little bit about some of the duos you've done, and maybe we can listen to an example of.
Right, sure. Well, I've being a pianist has given me the opportunity to perform and work with a lot of different singers, And of course, my connection with Fawn is a little different because she's also my life partner, fiance, actually, if you want to get technical about it. She actually is based in Whitehorse in the Yukon, so we're sort of back and forth a little bit. She spends some time here and I spend some time there. We've done a lot of musical work together, and her latest recording project, which will be coming out in the spring as well, which is built around a show that she developed of stories drawn from her personal life and songs called How to Say Sorry and Other Lessons. And we co-wrote a bunch of material for that project, and that will all be coming out on her recording. But we also redid a couple of the songs for my recording, so there's going to be a little bit of crossover between those two projects, which we thought was kind of a nice thing to do. And the versions are quite different. And I could play a track from, it's actually from my record, but this song will also appear on her project.
That'd be great.
And it's called Bittersweet Goodbye.
My breath and all was still, and I knew that until you said you loved me, nothing in this world could break the spell that you had cast, and yet it couldn't last another day. So now when you are far, still I hear your call, but there are only walls. I can't find the door that opens to you, though you've taken half my heartbeat left behind a sigh. I sink into this bittersweet goodbye. To this slow and gold.
And that was Bittersweet Goodbye. And that was a co-written piece.
Von Fritzen and myself, yes. Yeah, that's right.
Great. You know, you have a lot of other influences, and we've talked about the jazz and the classical one. We listened to Kachaturian and Dizzy Gillespie and so on.
And Bill Evans, yes.
Bill Evans, yeah. So, but what about, I think you also have some influences in the more progressive rock world.
Yeah, it's true. I'd like to think in a way that I sort of went backwards with rock music and pop music because my ears early on were sort of trained to accept fairly intricate sounds, you know, from the classical and the jazz world. A lot of rock music, I guess it felt probably maybe too simplistic for me, for my ears. And I guess I also was a bit snobby about it, to be honest, when I was young. By the time I got to high school, I was a little bit more open and ready to maybe receive something that was outside of my little jazz bubble. And the first band, rock band, that I heard that really grabbed my attention was a band called Genesis. And that, of course, was the band that produced two of the most iconic lead singers in sort of rock history, Phil Collins and Peter Gabriel. And Collins was also an incredible drummer, and I almost was more interested in his drumming than his singing, although I love him as a singer as well. But he was the drummer even when Peter Gabriel was in the band and later took over as the lead singer after Gabriel left. But the keyboard player in that band, Tony Banks, I was just a huge fan of what he did with harmony and just texture and color and sound. I just thought he was a master sound architect. And his playing, you know, I listened to a lot of the other progressive rock bands and I liked Yes a great deal. Mm-hmm. And I liked some of Emerson, Lake and Palmer's music, certainly King Crimson. But some of those keyboard players like Rick Wakeman and Keith Emerson were obviously amazing musicians. Sometimes their playing tended to be a little bit more show-offy, I guess, in
yeah,
a way.
Yeah, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, I'm sure, definitely kind of fall into that bombastic side at times.
At times, yeah.
And also, I mean, brilliant. Keith Emerson was just really brilliant.
Absolutely.
Kind of pianist.
Yeah, for sure. I guess the thing I always liked about Tony Banks was that he was a virtuoso in a different way. He wasn't as technically show-offy as those guys, but he just came up with great parts. And so I think that one of the great ones was the sort of opening of the song Firth of Fifth. That's why I learned this piano solo when I was about 15 years old, and we did it recently with my ensemble at Selkirk, so that was a lot of fun putting that together because I had to relearn the solo and learn it properly so we could listen to a little bit of Firth of Fifth.
Did you have some shortcuts when you did it at age 15 that now you can hear, oops, not quite the same?
Well, I just I think I wasn't a completist at that time, so I there were parts of it that I left out or didn't get to, so I sort of now I know the whole piece.
So should we listen to that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Let's hear a little bit of Firth of Fifth.
Great. Thank you. The Firth of Fifth by Genesis.
That's right.
And that was Peter Gabriel doing the vocals. That was his period of Genesis, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll end with this piece, and I'd like to thank you for coming in to the studio to do this show, David.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
Yeah, it's fun to listen to pieces you really love and play them for other people. And
absolutely.
All the out there in Radio Land, you get to hear pieces that David Restivo loves. Great. So those people listening to the show who are in Nelson, come out to the St. Xavier's Pro Cathedral on November 25th. It's Monday at 7:30, and hear the David Restivo Trio for a wonderful show. That is it for today's show, Bach and Beyond. And thank you again to my guest, David Restivo, for coming in.
Thank you, Doug.
And as we fade out Genesis playing the Firth of Fifth, that brings us to a close of this week's edition of Bach and Beyond.